Good afternoon. This is Tamara reading the Gilman Star for the week of February 10th. First, from the As We See It column. We enjoy hearing from readers and friends this time of the year when they renew subscriptions, as they keep us up to date on their lives and ask some probing questions, like these from Frank Underwood, who has lived in New York City for years but keeps in touch with his hometown. In his last missive, Frank asked, "Certain towns around here in Iroquois County have Indian names, but I've never learned what they mean in Indian, like Ashcom, Kankakee, Papineau, French, Chenoa, Wapella, or maybe these are not Indian names. I'm pretty sure there must be a book available with this information. Or maybe no one cares. I bet Augie Keitzman knew." Another of our late readers grew up in Danforth and spent most of his adult life in the Bloomington area, but would include a few corny jokes in his mailing. But Denny Henricks passed a few years ago, and his wife Kay Lubbin Henricks now offers these missives. She was only a whiskey maker, but he loved her still. And number two, no matter how much you push the envelope, it'll still be stationary. Roger Wilkin has sent us a picture of the Danforth Blue Ribbon 4-H Club, taken in December of 1949, in what we assume was the Danforth Community Hall. We counted 107 people in the picture, which ranged from youngsters in the front row, we guess at 3 or 4 years of age, with their parents and grandparents in the back rows. In those days, 4-H accounted for a lot of the social life in small towns. And a date has been set for Gilman Old Boys and Girls. The Gilman Old Boys and Girls Planning Committee has set August 12th through 15th of 2021 as the tentative dates for the 5-year reunion, which had to be canceled in 2020 because of concerns regarding the COVID pandemic. The committee stresses at this time that holding the reunion this summer depends on getting insurance coverage for events, amusements, and vendors and permits. The committee held a Zoom meeting last Thursday when the decision was made. Onarga, Gilman, drop plans to share police. The Gilman and Onarga Police Departments have been mulling the concept of sharing the cost of using police officers who would be provided by the county rather than employing their own officers. But that idea has now been officially dropped following meetings by both boards Monday night. Both communities are currently without their own police force. Gilman's chief retired several months ago and has not been replaced, and Onarga has been hiring officers from other departments, including the county, for several months. Officials from the two town boards met with Iroquois County Sheriff Derek Hagan and Iroquois County Board Chairman John Schur on January 26th to discuss a possible agreement for providing a police protection for both using county officers and what it would cost. It should be noted that there have been differences of opinion between the county board chairman and the two towns regarding a county assessment for being part of the 9/11 county service in past months, and at that time, county officials attended town board meetings at both Gilman and Onarga. At the January 26th meeting, Schur formally presented a contract to the two towns which calls for Gilman to pay a total of $88,782 and Onarga $59,938 for their respective share of the total cost of sharing two deputies. Under the terms of contract, deputies would spend 70 hours total each week in the two towns, 6 hours in Gilman and 4 hours in Onarga, with emergencies taking precedence. Gilman Alderman Randy Iman, also a former lieutenant for the county sheriff, attended the session for Gilman and said the cost presented was higher than originally estimated and that Onarga doesn't want anything higher than $48,500. It was noted that the county still has to take calls for Gilman and Onarga and respond to those calls, even if those towns do not have their own police. Speaking to the use of county officers for local communities, Iman noted that the practice was being used in Champaign County, Kankakee County, and Fairbury and Forest locally. Alderman Bill Kraft, who was also at the session January 26th, said the program was worth a try, and thought the county would benefit in that Gilman would be paying half the cost of two new officers, which the county may have to hire eventually anyway. Gilman Mayor Rick Thiesfeld said Gilman is still without a code officer, but has a good candidate for the job. In some towns, officers also do code enforcement. Gilman looking at some hefty expenses. Like an old house, the city of Gilman learned Monday night that some repairs can be expensive. Gilman Mayor Rick Thiesfeld told council members Monday night that the sewer system, lift station, that sits on the east side of Route 45 south of Cargill is having pump problems. The lift station goes back almost 50 years, and if nothing is done, the town could experience sewage issues. The estimated cost is $50,000 plus. A pump at the water tower is bad, which could cost $7,500, and the shafts at the tower could be bad, which would be costly. And in other areas, which could be costly, fees are increasing for the water meter program the town is using. The council discussed hiring a firm to develop and redesign a website, which would run from $4,000 to $9,000. The council also discussed proposed dates for a rescheduled Gilman Old Boys and Girls Reunion for August 12th through 15th, and the possibility that Gilman could qualify for a community development grant, which would fund the complete redevelopment of the downtown area and mean there will be construction downtown. Part of the plan calls for new water mains in the area. Final awards for the grant have not been announced, but Thiesfeld said Gilman's plan did score highly based on project plans. And now the Iroquois County COVID-19 update. Clifton was 255 up to 256. Ashcombe, 150 to 151. Danforth, 81 to 86. Onarga, 231 to 242. Watseka, 555 to 563. Crescent City remained at 62. Cisna Park, 173 to 176. Fayetteville, 37 to 38. And Piper City remained at 119. Shoons are parents of baby girl. Cody and Sarah Shoon of Gilman are parents of their first child, a baby girl, Elizabeth Justine Shoon, born January 24th at Riverside Hospital in Kankakee. Justine weighed 6 pounds and 7 ounces and measured 19.5 inches. Grandparents are Mark and Misty Shoon of Danforth and Larry and Chris Cheffer of Kankakee. Harold and Sarah Peters of Clifton will be celebrating their 60th wedding anniversary. They were married on February 11, 1961, at St. Paul's Episcopal Church in Kankakee. They have 4 children, Kim, Craig Alberts, Jim, Sherry Peters, Gary and Patty Peters, and Steve and Michelle Peters. They have 11 grandchildren and 1 great-grandchild. IW boys return most of scoring punch. Open at home Friday. The Iroquois West boys basketball team has 2 games under their belt thus far this season and will open at home this Friday when Dwight comes to town. IW coach Zach Monk says the team is returning 80% of the team's scoring from last year, highlighted by all-conference selections Jack McMillan and Ryan Tilstra, who combined for 27 points last season. Monk is also counting on leadership and experience from seniors Cade Kimmel, Ty Pankey, Jack Pree, and Connor Price. The Raiders will also have a luxury they have not always had in the past, in that there is some size on the front line, with sophomore Cannon Leonard at 6'9", and his brother senior Clayton Leonard at 6'5", which Monk figures will give the Raiders both an inside and outside presence. Junior guard Peyton Rhodes saw minutes last year as a soft, and newcomers Sam McMillan, Lucas Frank, Aiden Tilstra, Dalton Austin, and Evan Rogers will give the team additional depth. Monk feels the team will be competitive in the Sangamon Valley Conference, and experience will help in some close games, which were at Achilles' heel last year. Because of the modified COVID season schedule, the SVC tourney in the second week of March will be the focus for the team. ICGS, appointments only, cancels March program. The Iroquois County Genealogical Society has announced it will be open by appointment only until further notice. Appointments for research, information, and such can be made by calling 815-432-3730. The hours for appointments are the same as general business hours, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday through Friday. Those wanting information can also send an email to iroqgene@gmail.com or visit the Facebook page of Iroquois County Genealogical Society. Members of the ICGS plan to keep the Facebook page updated. The March program, Scottish Clans and Castles, is being canceled at this time, but it is hoped to be able to have the program later in the year. Those who pre-registered for the program will be contacted by an ICGS member in the near future with further information. If your birthday is between February 11th and 17th and your name appears in the printed Gilman Star, you're entitled to a free sundae at the Gilman Dairy Queen or McDonald's, a quarter pound of fudge from the front porch, and a free movie at the Onarga Theater. Clip and take the birthday list to the Gilman Dairy Queen, the McDonald's, the front porch, or the Onarga Theater. And have a great birthday! Old Courthouse Museum closed through February. The Board of Directors of the Old Courthouse Museum have voted to keep the museum closed to the public through the month of February. Museum volunteers will continue to check messages, so those wanting information and such can call 815-432-2215 and leave a message. Someone will also be checking emails, and those can be sent to ichs221567@yahoo.com. The decision on whether to reopen the museum will take place at the next Board of Directors meeting on February 23rd. The Facebook page, Old Courthouse Museum, Watsika, will be kept updated as well. The Lota American Legion, Post 503, is providing a fish, chicken fry, livers, and gizzards on Friday, February 12th at the Lota Legion Hall from 4 p.m. until 7 p.m. Adults $10, carryouts available, and curbside. For more information, call 217-781-3416. Iroquois Memorial Hospice celebrates 25 years of caring for patients. On February 14th, Iroquois Memorial Hospital will celebrate 25 years of caring for patients and their families in Iroquois, Ford, Livingston, Kankakee, and Vermilion counties. Iroquois Memorial Hospice is a not-for-profit hospice whose team members have an accumulation of 100-plus years of hospice experience. Every day, families choose Iroquois Memorial Hospice because our team truly cares. Our patients are not just a number, but they are our community, our friends, our neighbors, and our family. Our hospice team is an amazing group of people who truly make a difference in the lives of our patients and their families. Jeff Peterson, Administrator. In 2020, Iroquois Memorial Hospice made a total of 8,350 patient care visits. Hospice is committed to providing end-of-life care to the communities served by the Iroquois Memorial Hospital System. Hospice care focuses on comfort measures to alleviate pain and suffering to facilitate the best quality of life possible for the patient and the family. The patient's choice to determine end-of-life needs are respected and supported. Iroquois Memorial Hospice uses an interdisciplinary team approach to meet the physical, emotional, and spiritual needs of the patient and family unit. This team consists of Dr. Rodney Alford, Medical Director for Iroquois Memorial Hospice, Jeff Peterson, Administrator, Mallory Redeker, Clinical Coordinator, Reverend John Franklin, Chaplain Coordinator, Tracy Bishop, Social Worker and Bereavement Coordinator, Julie Poots, Social Worker, Lasagnana, Volunteer Coordinator and Outreach, Lisa McCann, RN, Tricia Hamilton, RN, Lisa Hughes, RN, Mary Cahoe, RN, Linda McTaggart, RN, Jean Snyder, RN, Angie Geraltz, Biller, and a CNA team that consists of Patty Lewis, Kelly Grabo, Stephanie Summers, Jennifer Williamson, Jesse Thompson, and Lindy Club, CNA Referral Coordinator. Additionally, there are 47 volunteers who are the heart of our Iroquois Memorial Hospice. I am proud to be a part of this special team, which is an important part of our community, said Mallory Redeker, Clinical Coordinator for Iroquois Memorial Hospice. The large volume of referrals we receive via word of mouth attests to those 25 years of excellent care our hospice team has provided. Iroquois Memorial Hospice is licensed by the state of Illinois, accredited by the Joint Commission, and is certified by Medicare and Medicaid. Iroquois Memorial Hospice is a member of the National Hospice and Palliative Care Organization, We Honor Veterans Program, and received the SHP Best Hospice Caregiver Satisfaction Top 5% Premier Performer Award in 2020. Illinois Memorial Hospice is located at 200 North Laird, Watseka, Illinois. For more information, please call 815-432-0185 or visit our website at imhrh.org. And now another sports story. The IW girls get off to a fast start to Down Comets in opener Monday at Gilman, Iroquois West 48, Central 37. The Iroquois West girls got off to a fast start Monday night in their season opener against one of their biggest rivals and cruised to the win. The Raiders had three players in double figures as they posted quarter leads of 11-2, 28-8, and 34-21. McKinley Tilstra led the West scoring with 15, while Abby Coker had 13, Shelby Johnson 11, Ileana Nambo 3, and Emma Lopez and Ashton Miller 1 each. Johnson had 5 boards for West, while Shea Small and Coker each had 4. The girls will be on the road again Thursday when they travel to Dwight. IW girls have experience. Coach Christy Airy has all 5 starters returning from last year's team, and the squad is senior-laden. And Airy says she plans to rely on that experience. Seniors Shelby Johnson, Emma Lopez, Ashton Miller, and Abby Coker, along with juniors McKinley Tilstra and Destiny Thomas, saw a lot of time last year, and I look for sophomore Shea Small to contribute heavily on the offensive end. Newcomer Ileana Nambo could see time at the point guard coming off the bench. I'm excited for the girls to be back out on the court, and we aren't going to waste a single second of the opportunity. How to watch IW Cage games. Because of the COVID-19 restrictions, attendance at Iroquois West basketball games are limited for all practical purposes to families of the players. Fans can watch most of the Raider games on nfhsnetwork.com, where a monthly subscription is $10.99, and an annual subscription is $69.99. NFHS will carry the Sangamon Valley games, with the Cisna Park game carried on Facebook Live, Boys Girls Basketball Facebook pages Facebook Live. The PBL game will be on YouTube. The Donovan game will be on Donovan's Facebook page. To subscribe to NFHS, go to nfhsnetwork.com. And now a column from Alan Weber. Biden is a Trojan horse, but who's at the helm? Although you'd never get one to admit it publicly, I suspect there are some Biden voters who might be experiencing a little buyer's remorse. Well, except turncoat Adam Kinzinger. I'm not speaking to the far-left liberals who think they're owed everything and that what was once licentious is now acceptable. I'm speaking specifically of the Dems and Rhinos who loathed Trump just because he was an outsider who sometimes said mean things. Perhaps even our local editorial writers are starting to have a little doubt they would ever, never admit. By now, it should be painfully obvious Biden is just a shell, a Trojan horse placed in the Oval Office courtesy of the country of China and Dominion voting machines. He has little energy, rarely goes anywhere, looks confused or angry at times, mumbles, and has reporters submit questions in advance. There's nobody home in that noggin of his anymore, and honest Americans realize it, regardless for who they voted for. And you Biden voters thought Trump was embarrassing on the world stage. Xi, Putin, and the Khomeini will have Joe bowing to them like Obama did the Saudi king. The biggest trouble with Biden being just a wooden hull, his presidency, not his head, is that we don't really know who's at the helm in the Oval Office, where and who is Oz. Perhaps Jen Psaki could circle back on that answer. I personally suspect Obama's behind the curtain, but can't prove it. Fortunately, the newspapers pay me handsomely to opine and not report. But some things you just feel. Obama has had the last 4 years to fortify his playbook on how to destroy America. He now has his personal lackey to be his mouthpiece without all that nasty criticism directed at himself. Another considered was our resident dingbat Nancy Pelosi, Ensconced in her new walls with razor wire and surrounded by her personal National Guard militia, her lust for power and hatred of Trump are insatiable. However, her age and reported propensity for alcohol in large quantities keeps her from being the top banana. She just thinks she is for the time being. How do walls work in D.C., but not at our southern border? The squad is not running things. Nobody really takes them seriously. How could you after that diatribe AOC let loose about how endangered she was during the January 6th Capitol unrest, only to find out she wasn't in the building? Her hallucinations reinforced my opinion there were non-Trump terrorists leading the way in the Capitol unrest, and we were gaslighted again. As I write this, Antifa is threatening to burn D.C. to the ground, probably to be labeled a peaceful demonstration again by the media. My biggest fear is China might be taking control, which would be the end of this country as we know it. The speed at which Biden has been issuing executive orders to erase Trump, China's enemy, is dizzying. At present, Biden is on a pace to scribble his name on an executive order 602 times in his first year, about double for second place contender FDR, our last socialist president. In 2 months, Biden has issued more executive orders than 16 former presidents did in their entire term. His actions thus far have cost thousands of workers for Keystone Pipeline jobs averaging $48 per hour, supposedly to be replaced with Green Deal jobs paying about $22 per hour. Crude oil is up $18 per barrel since Biden got elected. Recall, we lost billions in Obama's Green Deals. We're going to get soaked again at the gas pump. It appears we're about to open the southern border to allow undocumented Democrats in, give them free health care, and cage up their children again in an act of compassion. My bet they will have COVID vaccinations before my mother does. Do you really think it was Biden's idea to ruin girls' sports by allowing mediocre male athletes to identify as female to dominate women's sports? He has a 16-year-old granddaughter. Wonder how she feels about the added competition. How do Biden voters really feel about paying off these college degrees, such as gender studies or systemic racism, for example, particularly after having worked in script to put their kids through college? I know what conservatives think. After the Herculean job Trump did getting COVID vaccines produced in record time, what do you think of the way Biden is handling getting shots in arms? To date, it's been a bungled mess, but at least we can all sleep well knowing our politicians and some incarcerated felons got theirs. I question if Biden knows what he's signing, as many of the orders are far to the left of the way he voted in his previous 47 years of doing nothing in Congress. Something is not right about his actions. If there are any Biden voters that read this commentary, they'll just harumph my words as so much dribble, still self-assured in their choice of the man they voted to lead the free world. But I'm confident they look at themselves in the mirror every morning and some just might be starting to question what they've helped unleash on our great country. You might want to start practicing up on your Mandarin. We'll turn now to the death notices for the week. Daryl Jean Niswander, 80, of Watsika, passed away February 2nd at Carle Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Services were held February 10th at the Milford Christian Church with Reverend Brent Zastro officiating. Burial at the Onarga Cemetery. Arrangements were made by Knapp Funeral Home in Watsika. Memorials may be made to families' wishes. Please share a memory of Daryl at knappfuneralhomes.com. Alberta June Whaley Johnson, 84, of Thawville, passed away February 7th at Riverside Medical Center in Kankakee. Private funeral services will be on Friday, February 12th at the Onarga Christian Church. Burial will be held at a later date at Ridgeland Township Cemetery in Thawville. Arrangements were made by the Knapp Redenius Funeral Home in Gilman. Please share a memory of June at knappfuneralhomes.com. Robert L. Fisher, 95, of Clifton, passed away February 5th at the Illinois Veterans Home in Manteno. Visitation was from 9:30 to 11:30 a.m. Monday, February 5th. I'm sorry, let me repeat that. Visitation will be from 9:30 a.m. until 11:30 a.m. Funeral service on Monday, February 15th at Zion Lutheran Church in Chabance. Military rites will be conducted by American Legion Post 408 at the church. A graveside service will be held at 2 p.m. at the Onarga Cemetery. Arrangements were made by Knapp Funeral Homes in Clifton. Please share a memory of Bob at knappfuneralhomes.com. Leni J. Hethke, 10 months, of Buckley, passed away February 4th at her home in the arms of her loving family. Memorial services will be held at a later date. Arrangements were made by Knapp Funeral Home in Onarga. Memorials may be made in Leni's honor to St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Please share a memory of Leni at knappfuneralhomes.com. Bob Poole, 84, of Danforth, formerly of Onarga, passed away Thursday, February 4th at Faith Place in Danforth. Graveside services will be held at a later date at Delray Cemetery. Arrangements were made by Knapp Funeral Home in Onarga. The family would like to thank the workers at Prairie View Lutheran Home for the wonderful care they gave Bob over the last 3 years. Memorials may be made to Prairie View Lutheran Home in Danforth or to the donor's choice. Please share a memory of Bob at knappfuneralhomes.com. And now a column by Russ Mann, A Bridge Too Far. In the not-too-distant past, the Republican Party was known for its conservatism and fiscal responsibility, and Republicans were proud to celebrate that Abraham Lincoln was a Republican who opposed racist views. At one time, Republicans relished calling themselves the Party of Lincoln. Something went very wrong. New arrivals, mostly uninvited to the party, brought with them different values. As of late, the Republican Party has become synonymous, much to the dismay of many old-line Republicans, with deficit spending when they hold power, racism, white supremacy, and most recently, some are aligning themselves with conspiracy theories a la QAnon, advocating anti-democracy, sedition, and even armed revolt and murder to accomplish their goals. The latter has earned them the nickname the GOPQ. Unfortunately, Republican leadership, merely by failure to denounce the radical newcomers, is signaling approval and encouragement of that lunatic fringe of newly minted QAnon Republicans in their caucus who openly advocate for murdering congressional members across the aisle. Lifelong Republican donor and conservative activist and one-time Trump advisor Jacob Monti decided he's no longer able to live with the new GOP and has joined the Democratic Party. His reason? Insurrection against the duly elected government of the United States incited by former President Donald Trump was a bridge too far for me. Monti told Aaron Burnett of CNN that the GOP was now more the party of QAnon's conspiracy theories than of conservatives like himself, and he stated that, "I'm out. Trump owns the party, and Trump has always loved the conspiracy theories, and this is Trump's party now." The party of Lincoln has lost its vision, and Jacob Monti is not alone in recognizing that fact. Since 2016, numbers of lifelong Republicans have left the party. Some are high-profile, like Michael Steele, one-time chair of the RNC, and one would have thought it would take an apocalypse to turn conservative columnist George Will from the GOP. But Will is not alone, as other staunch conservative columnists like Max Boot and Jennifer Rubin have also left the party in opposition to the Trump cult. Donald Trump is not the only reason that some conservatives have decided that the Republican Party no longer represents their values. That list of reasons includes the radicalism of Ted Cruz, Mitch McConnell, Rand Paul, Matt Gaetz, Jim Jordan, etc. And recently, new anti-democracy legislators have been added to the ranks of Republicans who have never met a conspiracy they didn't like. The new junior senator from Missouri, Josh Hawley, was pictured encouraging the January 6 insurrection at the Capitol, and another newbie, QAnon supporter Marjorie Taylor Greene, advocated the assassination of House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and believes that the California fires were started by Jewish laser beams from space. It's no wonder that rational people in the Trump Republican Party have had enough and are leaving, not necessarily to join the Democrats, but in the hope of salvaging what once was a proud conservative party. Donald Trump may even help with that, as he has threatened to form his own party in opposition to the Republicans that he views as disloyal to him. Meanwhile, other rank-and-file Republicans in red states are disapproving of their state GOP legislators and breaking ranks. In Arizona, there is a pushback as Republican legislators attempt to change the election rules to allow their state to throw out valid election results and ignore the will of the voters. And in Pennsylvania, hundreds have switched party affiliation as a result of lies that led to the Capitol insurrection, that the 2020 election was flawed. The bad news for the GOPQ is that the nation's demographics are changing, and predictions are that by mid-century, Caucasians may find themselves in the minority to a new majority of Black, Brown, and Asian people. Republicans in red states across the nation are attempting to offset that, not by appealing to the new majority and winning their support, but by taking advantage of the Supreme Court's 2013 decision to overturn the 1965 Voting Rights Act that prevented discrimination in voting. By passing new restrictive voter laws that obstruct access to voting for the old minority, Republicans hope to hang on to power even if it's necessary to cheat to accomplish it. So much for the proud party of Lincoln. This has been Tamara reading the Gilman Star for the week. Hope to read with you again soon.